From the Tidecast Audio Network, this is Task and Twos.
Hey, Tidecat fans, welcome to Task and Twos. I'm Luke Tasker. I'm joined each week by one of my favorite teammates of all time, Andy Fantuz. Andy, we'll get right into this thing. The Tidecats have been on a bye week since our last episode of Task and Twos. And so, you know, they're rested. They're back on the field, ready to go. I've heard so many different opinions and ideas as to what the bye week was for. I have my own opinions about the right way to use a bye week. What about yourself? What was your routine as a player?
It wasn't always the same, but it depends if you had any injuries or not for me. So if I was had any nagging issues or injuries, that would be the number one priority. But I was a big believer in kind of stepping away from the game and stepping away from the scene and kind of almost a mental refresh as much as a physical refresh. So yeah. I like to just, you know, occupy my mind with something else, at least for a couple of days. You know, don't lose any physical strength or anything like that or any physical progress that you've been making through the season. But just a little mental refresh I was a big believer in that. How about yourself?
Yeah, it was always so frustrating when you were injured on a bye week because you had to stay around the facilities. And my last season, I was effectively injured the entire season. So I was kind of always sticking around. But I remember I went to Florida one year for a bye week. I went to my wife and I went up to Collingwood for a couple nights one bye week early on. And of course I'd be back in Buffalo like as much as I can too, just to get back across the border and see family. But I'm all about it, man. I had to get mentally away from it. And I always found that I came back really, really ready to go, like really feeling great about the team and about just my, you know, you get perspective on your career. I felt like I actually played well after bye weeks too. And, you know, I can think about when Ken Austin gave us the bye week in the Eastern Final for 2014, before the Eastern Final. And we came out and played great against Montreal after the bye week in, I think it was 16, maybe 17, when we came back and after 0-8 and won the Labor Day Classic after a bye week. I think it's hugely valuable. It was always disappointing to me if coaches pinched the bye week with too many extra days and day zero, day double zero. That's like the worst thing to see as a player on the, you know, they print the schedules like 2 months in advance and Drew Stroshein, the equipment manager, hangs them on the wall in the locker room. And every now and again, you get a strange schedule, you get a 12-day week or whatever it is, or a bye week, and then they put the day 3-2-1. Day zero and day double zero before before you're you know, in a 5-day week, and it's like, oh no, like we're gonna be on the field for 15 hours total prior to this game. But the Ticats used this as a rest week, even though it was a shorter bye week, and they're back at it now. Excited to see that.
I think with the coaching staff now, the guys who they you know, with Coach O, he's played not too long ago.
Mark Washington, they're all.
Yeah, good. Like I think they understand the player's side of it a little more than a guy like June Jones did. He was a little bit more old fashioned.
Yeah.
And
June would run 100 plays of offense on a practice. That was crazy.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh yeah. But it's it's non-contact, right? Which means a lot for the receivers.
Yeah, right. So you're not going to get hurt because, yeah.
Oh, yeah. You're still running full speed. Yeah. Not the same for receivers.
No, 7-on-7 is just as tiring as, you know, full con. Yeah, you can avoid a couple tackles, but, you know, we're just running and running. And June had no concept for the tiring of our legs. But I'll tell you what, June Jones' offense was one of the most freeing offenses for a receiver. You just, man, like we learned principles in like the first 2 weeks, like principles of his passing concepts. And then you just go. I mean, the playbook never changed. You just had options with every play. Man, that was like, that was just such a fast and fun offense for a receiver.
Yeah. Run into the game with six or eight plays instead of 110.
Yeah. They're like the call sheets would still have like 80 plays, but it was just the same play listed like with like 15 different formations. And then you just know what, you know, you barely had to study. It was amazing. Like very, very, very unique offense is a run and shoot converted to the CFL field. It was great.
Yeah. It's speaking like one of those. I was just going to say is one of those ones that even though there was only a few concepts, you still had to be intelligent to play in that offense because you did have to make the right reads like on the fly. So not necessarily, you either get it or you don't get it kind of thing, right? Like, it's not, like you said, you don't have to study before a game because there's 50 plays that are new this week, but you also have to have a good understanding of the game and just have those experience, have those reps, like the experience of the reps on the field.
Yeah. I mean, his, divide, like the, it was a concept that June Jones and his run across the league, but June was, I mean, his offense was very much so based on this concept, and like that play could look 100 different ways, and you don't know what it's going to be until the snap of the ball because three receivers are adjusting based on what they see in coverage and on what the other receivers do, so it looks crazy. I mean, it might not even look like the same play by the end of it. But in the huddle, it's a simple call. You just have to have really intelligent quarterbacks and receivers to be able to navigate it live. But yeah, wonderful offense to run. I loved it.
Yeah.
Speaking of coaches, let's do something different today, Andy. We have a bye week. There's no game that we're coming out of. Let's have a conversation about the Ticat coaching staff. Andy and I are lucky to have played, you know, for Coach O and two of his coordinators, Tommy Condell and Jeff Reinbolt. Let's share a little bit about our experience with these guys. And obviously it's very, you know, natural for you and I to, we've had a lot of conversations about Tommy Condell, and we both have worked with him for quite a long time. I'll start by saying when I came to Hamilton, I assumed that I would probably have known Tommy for longer than anyone else, as I had just spent 4 years with him at Cornell. And of course you knew Tommy before I did, in Saskatchewan, right?
Yeah. He was my offensive coordinator in my first year in Saskatchewan. And, funny story. I don't know, maybe I've told this before, but, when I was first getting to camp, I'm walking around the facility, and I asked this guy who's carrying the projector and his briefcase and some other things, his little mat with his men and stuff, and I said, like, where's the receiver meeting room? And he's like, oh, it's right there, you know. He pointed me in the right direction, and it was turns out it was Tommy Condell, but I thought it was like a video guy or video assistant or something. And then I get in the room, and he's like leading the meeting. He's my boss. So I thought pretty embarrassed about that. Was a little ignorant. I should have Googled the names.
Yeah, really.
Googled the faces. Yeah. But no, Tommy taught me a lot, and I don't remember a ton from that first year. I was just sort of wide eyed and running, playing scout team offense, like specialty, just everything. So I was just running. And I got involved in the offense. But one of my favorite things about Tommy was, you know, he always kind of said, like, you have your own toolbox, you know, and he would say, you got to think of yourself as like Andy Fantus Inc. And who you are as a player and how you're going to continue to train that person and continue your education as a player. And what are you going to add to your toolbox? And that's kind of why I took that approach of, when I started to relay that to teammates, it would come out to practice and be like, what are we going to get better at today? What specifically are you going to work on to improve your game today? And it wasn't just like, oh, I'm going to catch the ball better. It was like, I'm going to work on catches that are below my knees and work on the hand placement of having my pinkies touching together when I catch that ball. For instance, this as an example. So he you know, he's like, how are you going to add to your toolbox? How are you going to make yourself better little by little and have different parts of your game to exploit against a DB? So you'd watch film on a certain DB and you think, you know what plays had worked on him, how, say, like the out pattern, like the 12-yard out pattern, how different receivers have been successful against that DB, and then trying to add, you know, one more thing, because if it comes late in the game and you've already ran the speed out, you've already ran the flipper out, what's one other way that we can beat him? And then approaching it day by day like that, for me, really improved like the craftiness of me as a receiver over time, by a lot.
So that's one of the most memorable things about your leadership as a player to me was, what are you getting better at today? So you would come on the practice field and you would find, the thing that I loved is when you picked out, because I was always ready for it, you know, because I had heard it and I was thinking that way too. I mean, truly, you know, you have something that you got to do better today. For me, I hated watching film of myself and seeing my shoulders up high. Like I was kind of like trotting along. I wanted to like run with my shoulders down. So I was writing out shoulders and stride in my notebook. And that's what I was always trying to get better at. But I loved when he'd come on the field during stretch and pick out, like, you know, the deer in the headlights rookie out there who like doesn't know, like, you know, just not really totally tuned in yet, trying, you know, learning how to be a professional athlete, you know, and you'd say, you know, Hey, I could pick a name, but I won't. You go, hey, what are you working on today? And, you know, you just get the dumb, like, but that was a great leadership tool of yours. I didn't actually even realize that you were getting that from Tommy, I guess. I mean, obviously it's like in line with what he coaches, but I didn't realize that came from him. That was it really was a good thing for our receiver group to be focused on. Like, you gotta go to the practice field with something specific that you're going to get better at, or you're really just out there getting yourself tired, you know, if you're not thinking about greatness.
Yeah, exactly. Have a purpose in the way you, before you start a pass pattern as a receiver, right? You have a purpose, you have an intent, you have a plan, and then that plan might get deviated a bit and you need to adjust. But, you know, that's how you remember things better and improve more, right?
So you mentioned Tommy's the little men. So for the listeners, Tommy Condell has this hilarious, I mean, he probably wouldn't like the fact that I call it hilarious, but he has a coaching technique that literally in the receiver room, there's like a green mat that's probably, I don't know, almost like maybe like a yard long, like 2 feet by 3 foot, something like that. And then he has like a bunch of little football player men, what are they called? Toy soldiers or
like the green men.
Yeah. Green army men. But like they are like one guy's catching, one guy's like a receiver, one guy's like in a 3-point stance. And like it sounds ridiculous describing this. And Tommy knows that it's a little bit, you know, a little bit funny. But like literally he would call somebody up there to go up to the little football action figures and like put them in cover three or line them up in, you know, 4-week Sam and just kind of, you know, experiment with and where they're supposed to be related to the hash and the numbers and the sidelines and stuff. And really it's a great visualization. And he kind of made you really like think about, okay, if, you know, if I'm to the field side and it's 4-week Sam, what is the safety doing on the backside of the field? Like, I guess I haven't really thought about that until now I have to put him on the field. Why is he lined up where he's lined up? And how can we tell, you know, how can that give us a tell, when we're out there on the field? It's genius, but it's very, very funny. And it's part of Tommy Condell's sort of personality as a coach. He's not afraid to be a little bit outside of the box or kooky. I mean, those are pretty funny to walk into the meeting room. And, you know, I remember Bob Young actually coming into our receiver room one day, I think at Jarvis, actually, when we were playing in Guelph or just moving into Tim Hortons Field. But Bob Young sat into our receiver room And I remember him saying, Tommy, and he's, you know, very polite about these. Tommy, what is this? What is going on with this little green figurines on the mat? But fun stuff. Yeah, Tommy taught me. I knew how to play receiver before I met Tommy at Cornell. He taught me so much. Effectively, in high school, anybody who's a good athlete, it just ends up being the best, or just, you know, you win games just by athleticism. But all I could do was run as fast as I could run before Tommy taught me things about my shoulders and deceptive speed and how to stop fast. And when I started with Tommy at Cornell and into the Ticats, I started so focusing on how fast I could stop as opposed to how fast I could run. I realized that my speed was good enough for a lot of the routes that I needed to win on. It's that I needed to be able to stop before anybody realized I was breaking off a route. The classic, always shave, always shave, always shave. That's Tommy Condell's, one of the principles of the wide receiver room, Andy Fantuz. And I'll throw myself in there as well. You and I were route shavers to the max, my friend.
Yeah. Yeah, that was one of the commandments in the room, right?
That's right. Wide receiver commandments. Always outside release a go route. Always stack your defender. Never break at your depth. Or never let a DB dictate your depth.
Yeah.
You know, Tommy, if you have a 10-yard out route and the defender's at 9 yards, you know, it was a mortal sin not to run through and into that defender to get to your depth. He's an excellent coach because of what he sticks to his principles. And of course he is a hard worker, almost to a flaw. That guy will grind and grind and grind, whatever it takes for a team to make it. So one of my, of course, favorite coaches of all time, and he means a lot to my career. I know yours as well.
Yeah. Yeah, Tommy was great. Always had his cigars after the game, win or loss.
Oh, yeah.
A cigar. Yeah.
In the booth at times, I'm told. So.
Oh, yeah? I didn't know that.
Which is probably not kosher. I don't know if we're supposed to say that on our on Task and Twos, but it's out now. So down the hallway there, Coach Reinbolt, I mean, you and I both have a long experiences with Coach Reinbolt as well. There was one year with the Ticats that Coach wasn't a part of the staff, and apart from that, he's been there since 2013. I do think, first of all, everyone in CFL knows Coach Reinbolt is a character. He's wild. I do think he's one of the best special teams coaches that there is in the CFL, but that I've ever been around. He is built to be a special teams coach.
Yeah. I never played that many special teams through my career. Although I really enjoyed special teams. I remember when I was at Western, I would love the special teams drills. Absolutely love it. And I was pretty good at it too, but, just playing, being the star receiver, they don't want to risk getting hurt on special teams, right? And then that kind of continued into the pros. I played a little bit of kick return and punt return in my early years. But anyway, I guess where I'm going with that is I spent a lot of years not really being involved in special teams other than in training camp. And when Jeff came on the scene, he had these like the seven fundamentals of football. And I guess there's two things about Jeff I remember the most, but the seven football moves, he called it. And he basically broke all football movements into seven fundamental moves. And it just kind of blew me away that it was like he really simplified it like that. And yeah, it was true. So I loved his drills that would just work on these techniques and would make you a better all-around player and just understand the game and the angles of play, the physics of football, so much better. So I love participating in his drills and being part of it and learning from him. And that's the first thing for me, for him, the biggest impact I had from him. And then I also loved his meetings, just how he'd start with the you know, the quote.
Yeah.
Some quote, some picture, and I was writing those down, motivational quotes from, you know, it could be Muhammad Ali or Michael Jordan or just past athletes, not even necessarily athletes, political leaders,
yeah.
Just inspiring people. So yeah, those are two fond memories.
Yeah. I think that Reibold's meetings are like the guy puts time and effort into his meetings, and it is not a lecture he makes use of every single minute, and it's a classic tale in the CFL. You go ask any special teams coach anywhere and they'll tell you they don't get enough meeting time. That is the theme of special teams in the CFL. They have the 4.5 hours in house, and the staff has to determine how to distribute that or break that up amongst the position groups and offense, defense, and special teams. And so they're always pressed for time, but Reinbolt was a special teams meeting. He is a master at it. And I'm sure that listeners don't realize that Jeff Reinbolt dances into a special teams meeting maybe a third of the time. If there's a big win and a good special teams performance, he literally is dancing into the special teams meeting to hand out rewards and things that he's made up for to incentivize guys. He just has an ability to make a culture in the special teams room. And I think that's hugely important. What I loved, because I was like you, I mean, we didn't play that much special teams really, but we both held, which is a crucial niche role in the special teams. And we were also, I remember, I wasn't playing yet. I had just got to the team, and we played that exhibition game, or not exhibition game, but the satellite game in Moncton. And I remember your catching the field goal and pitching it, I think, to Mark Beswick, I believe.
Mark Beswick, yeah.
Yeah. For an awesome fake field goal touchdown. You know, Jeff had a great mind for that kind of stuff too. It wasn't gimmicky. He didn't force it, but we had a lot of things up our sleeves that we could run, some that we never got the chance to, but that we had practiced. And, you know, he's a really smart special teams coach, like as far as the CFL rules go as well.
Yeah, he all his gimmicks, he said, you know, it's going to work as long as you execute. So yeah. It's just like, you just relax and execute and it's going to work. It wasn't we hope they're going to be in this defense, or they react, we hope they're going to react like this. It's like, if we do our job, it's going to work. And it usually does. It usually did. Yeah.
Yeah. In the 2019 Grey Cup, which I don't love to bring up, but the last catch of my career was a shovel pass from Liram Hairalahu, because we ran the fake field goal and the look wasn't even there. I don't even think the defense was lined up into what we were expecting, but it was at a point in that game where it was just like, let's we're not questioning this. We're going to run this fake just to try to do something. We got the first down, but yeah, that was unfortunately the last catch of my career, but another beauty drawn up by Jeff Reinbold. Well, good. I mean, I'm just excited for these guys. Part of it, you know, because you and I have played with this whole staff, it makes it even more emotional for me, you know, watching the season progress. Not only do I know all these players personally, you know, the coaching staff as well. I know, you know, these guys have been, a lot of them, working here since 2013 on and off at least. And man, this last stretch of the regular season, you know, means a lot for the players, the coaches, and the Ticat fans as well, of course. It's going to be interesting.
Certainly is. They control their destiny. So that's where you want to be. If they, you know, no matter what happens, if they win out, they get a home playoff game. And obviously that's assuming the other teams are going to win out as well. So they definitely control where they finish up, and that's a place you want to be in. You don't want to be, I think you mentioned this last week, you don't want to be hoping other teams need to lose and this specific scenario, one team needs to beat another. So just do your job, win your games, and you'll have at least one home, or you'll have at least a home playoff game, and hopefully a bye as well.
Yeah. So, well, man, let's call it there for the day. We'll get ready for the Ottawa game this weekend. Andy and Louis B will have the pregame, halftime, and postgame show. RJ Broadhead and myself will have the call during the four quarters. Can't wait, Andy. I'll see you up in Hamilton.
Sounds good.
Task and Twos. Like and subscribe to Hang With Them Weekly.